comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors. Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on the planet. We're here because you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. I guess probably all of you by now, all around the world, know that there was an earthquake today in the United States that shook the northeastern corridor of the United States, which of course includes Washington, D.C. I think they're saying it was a 5.9 magnitude. It shook both the Capitol building and the White House, as of course it shook the entire city of Washington, D.C. It was felt hundreds of miles away, and some folks have been quite concerned about that, because that's not an area of the United States that is accustomed to strong earthquakes. While that's not a major earthquake, it certainly is a strong earthquake, and it's not one that it's not the type of thing people are accustomed to in that part of the country. One of our members sent me a message and told me that he lives in Virginia, which is where the epicenter was, and he has lived in Virginia for over 20 years now and has never experienced anything like this, and wanted to know if I thought perhaps this is related to the approach of Nibiru. Well, it may be. I don't know. Something is certainly having a huge effect upon all the planets of our solar system. And so, it's possible, quite possible, that that something might be this Nibiru. Some people say that's fiction. Others point to pictures that are now becoming available that show certainly something out there. Sean, I don't know. I really don't know if that is directly related to the approach of Nibiru or something akin to Nibiru. But I certainly don't think we have seen the last of these sorts of things. I think it's going to rock and roll here with increasing frequency and intensity for quite some time, and then it's going to settle down. If you are not subscribed to the K-Files, be sure that you do. It's our free weekly newsletter, and you subscribe by just going over to my website and click where it says K-Files, and then subscribe. Just put your email address in there. You will get an automated reply immediately at that email address that has a link in it that you have to click in order to activate your subscription. If you don't click that link, you will not be getting the K-Files. So every week we have a number of people who subscribe and then don't click the link. So click the link, okay? We'll be back with John Lear, my guest this evening, right after this. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is someone who has been with us before. It's been a while. But he is someone that I think absolutely everyone in the audience will know already. But we do have a few folks that join us every night around the world for the very first time. And sometimes it's their very first dip in our genre. So let me introduce my guest, John Lear. He is a retired airline captain, former CIA contract pilot with over 19,000 flight hours, over 11,000 in command of three or four engine jet transports. He's flown over 100 different types of aircraft in over 60 countries around the world, and he retired in 2001 after 40 years of flying. John Lear is the son of the inventor of the Lear jet, Bill Lear, and he holds more FAA airman certificates than any other FAA certified airman. John held 17 world records, including speed around the world in a Lear jet Model 24 set in 1966, and was presented the PATCO, which is Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association, award for outstanding airmanship in 1968. He is the senior vice commander of the China Post 1, the American Legion's Post for Soldiers of Fortune, a 29-year member of Special Operations Association, and a member of Pilots for 911truth.org. There is more. But at this point, let me take a breath and say, John, welcome back to the show. We're delighted you're here.
Thanks, Kevin. Nice to be here.
John, you know, you for the past several years, you have spent most of your focus on the 911 Truth project or projects. And I do, before the show is over, want us to get into that a little bit, because it, in a way it might even be somewhat related, even if distantly, to the topic that I ask you to come and talk with us about here tonight. And so before this show is over, I do want us to get into the 911 Truth information. And see if my convoluted, warped way of thinking holds any water.
Oh, great.
John, I ask you to sort of be our expert commentator here tonight on this mysterious bit of information, actually several bits of information, that seem to be continually surfacing. A little bit surfaces, and then a couple of years go by, and another little bit surfaces, and, you know, and it's all about Mars. It's all about, have we actually had a manned mission to Mars, or multiple manned missions to Mars, and do we have a base on Mars? A lot of people say we do, a lot of people say we don't, but I want us to talk about the photographs that I sent you. I hope you had a chance to view them.
Yeah, we got them.
Okay. They're very mysterious, and by themselves, I would have said this photograph from Hubble is curious. That's what I would have said. And I would have said, well, it certainly looks like a structure. And for those who are watching in our members area, I will put that series of pictures back up in just a moment, and you'll be able to see them. And I would have said it looks like a structure. It doesn't look like something geological. It looks like a structure. And it's gigantic. And that's about all I would have thought about it. I mean, it would have been a curiosity, something I was interested in. But we have something even more curious, and I'm going to play that Those who are listening are going to hear it. Those who are in our members area and you're watching on our television channel, you're going to see it. These are two astronauts. One is Gene Cernan and one is Christopher Ferguson. And they're making a statement, each one, about going back to Mars. So let's play that, and then we'll come back and start dealing with the information.
And it's certainly that one, although I Buzz does want to go back to Mars, and I support that.
But hopefully in the not-too-distant future, you're going to see a heavy lift vehicle manufactured and by our commercial partners, designed by NASA in partnership, and we're going to go back to the moon, back to Mars, back to Mars, back to Mars, back to Mars.
Back to Mars, back to Mars, back to Mars, back to Mars.
Okay, that's it. And on the one hand, with Captain Ferguson, he was the commander of the last shuttle mission. With him, you might say, well, that was a slip. He didn't really mean to say that. It just kind of, he knows we haven't been to Mars, and it just slipped. Okay, you could give him that. Except Gene Cernan, what he said was in response to Buzz Aldrin's statement that we do not need to go back to the moon. So you can't say he just slipped and really meant we're going to, you know, Buzz wants to go back to the moon, because he was responding to Buzz's statement that we do not need to go back to the moon. What do you think about these two guys?
Well, as far as Cernan saying we don't need to go back to the moon, we never went to the moon in the first place.
Well, I understand your position on that. But this statement that Buzz does want to go back to Mars, what do you think?
We've never been at Mars. Never been to Mars. I don't think we've been to Mars. And if we couldn't get to the moon, how did we get to Mars? I'm getting a little feedback here. Is there any way you can turn that down?
Well, we can try here. Let's see what we... I don't know that it will work, but we'll give it a shot here. And see if that's a little bit better there.
Okay, let me try that. Yeah, that's better.
I don't know. It just may be a... Maybe something we have to live with for a moment or two here. But what do you think about this? Why do we have two astronauts talking about going back to Mars?
I don't know. It's interesting. I don't think we've been there. It probably is a slip of the tongue. It's true. I've heard guys swear to me that we have been to Mars. So my opinion is that we haven't been. But, you know, there's other guys say that we have been.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, we'll come back to we didn't go to the moon. I want you to share with the audience why you have that position, but we'll come back to that in just a second. First, I want to get sort of your pilot's eye view of these pictures. Pretty amazing pictures, actually, from the Hubble Space Telescope. And our regular listeners will remember when we dealt with these, people who listen all the time. We've already dealt with these on a couple of shows. But what we didn't have is we didn't have someone who is certifiably one of the top pilots in America, if not one of the top pilots in the world. And we didn't have a pilot's eye view and description of what we're looking at. So let me describe for those who are listening by radio. We're looking at a picture of Mars. It was snapped by the Hubble Space Telescope, ostensibly in 1992. Sticking out of the South Pole region, you can see something. You see something protruding there. And what I did is I just I said, okay, well, that's on the bottom of the planet, but if you were standing there, if you were standing on that South Pole, you wouldn't feel like you were upside down. Everything would look right side up. So all I did is I flipped it so that the South Pole is now at the top, and then I zoomed in to see what is it that's up there. And I have a series of three zooms here, and they are numbered. The first one, it's zoomed in quite a bit, but we can see there's something there, and looks like some kind of towers or spires sticking up, and maybe some kind of wall. Zoom two, we get a lot closer, and we see a lot more detail. If you're approaching that as a pilot, what would that look like to you?
Well, it doesn't look real. I mean, it's just too big. The terrain looks bad. It doesn't look like a real photo of Mars. And I've looked at plenty of pictures of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't have the definition. And it's an interesting little protrusion there. Was it sent by NASA or by Mellon Space Systems?
I don't know. It was snapped. These pictures were taken by Hubble. I do not personally remember now if these were released by Mellon or if they were released by NASA. But all of the pictures of Mars done with Hubble are somewhat blurry like this, and they are because Mars, they say, is too close and Hubble is too powerful, and that's the reason for it. But the entire series looks like this. It's just that this one, Mars, the attitude of Mars was such that we see a bit more of the South Pole than we see in the other ones. But the other ones look very, very similar to the unzoomed first version there that I show it on the left side. I show the way it was released. On the right side, I show that same thing flipped so that the South Pole is at the top. So on that picture where you have two of them, what you're looking at is basically the quality that was released to the public. And the whole series is about like that.
Now, what'd you say?
I said the whole series looks about like that, just a little bit hazy. And I think part of the haze may be because of some atmospheric cover, some clouds, very thin, but it's there. And, we're looking kind of through that, haze. But it is huge, isn't it?
It's what?
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think those spire-looking things are sticking up there?
Well, like I say, it doesn't look real to me, so...
So would you think the Hubble people photoshopped it?
Well, I'm sure they did. You know, they've been lying to us all along. First of all, there's two Hubbles. There's not just one. And when the second one was launched, that's the one we were told was the first one. And they were working so well that they wanted to view something out in space that required a binocular view. And they needed both of them, so they told us, the public, that there had been a problem, that somebody had not ground something correctly on the mirror, and they had to bring it back, and that took 2 years. But in fact, it was working perfectly, and the military was using both of them to get a binocular view of whatever they wanted to look at. And the public paid for the rework, which there was no rework. And, of course, the company who did the mirrors were happy because they got paid for doing nothing. And so that's the story on the Hubble. But as far as not being able to see anything close, that's baloney. There's too many ways for it to to have been configured, and there's no way that we're going to send up a telescope that we can't look closely at the Moon, Mars, Saturn, Venus, Jupiter, all the rest of the planets. And so they just feed us this baloney slowly and expect us to believe it. Every once in a while they throw in a picture like this with some object that we get all excited about. But the fact is Mars is populated by a population of probably close to Earth, maybe more. We're 7 billion. They're probably 7 or 8 billion. And they're folks just like us. Some are just like us. Some are quite different. There's probably 40 or 50 different alien species on Mars. But, of course, we're told that there's no air and or very little air, no atmosphere, and the wind is always blowing, and it's red, and nothing could possibly live there. And maybe we'll find a little shells or something that might have grown, but there could be nothing else there, and nothing could be further from the truth, because it's heavily populated, lots of stuff's going on. There's so much traffic going back between Mars and other planets that it would be hard to set down a photographic vehicle like we are alleged to have done and not seen something. That's why the photos that Malin Space Systems are showing you from Mars were taken in two places. One was in northern Canada and one was in Antarctica. And they use clips from both those places, photos from both those places, as as if it were on Mars, but they aren't actual photos on Mars. The original Viking program used the shots that they used were taken out of Death Valley, California. And the reason I know that is the morning it landed, I was taking a class with the wife of one of the remote piloted vehicles, one of the Viking landing vehicles. And when she says that when he looked at it on television, he says, "That's not Mars. That's Fifth Valley. I was just out there last week. I know exactly where that is. That's where we practiced." And so we know that that was bogus. And we also have the story, I forget whether it was Art Bell or George Norrie, I think it was Art Bell, but they were doing something on a show on Mars, and a lady called in, said she formerly worked for NASA, and she was in one of the photo rooms, one of the rooms where they had the television.
Okay, John, I hate to do it, but a break just took over. I got just a few seconds here to clear off the air so this break can play, but we'll pick up right there when we come back. Folks, don't go away.
I just listened to the Kevin Smith Show and my IQ jumped 20 points.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is John Lear. John, as we went to break, you were talking about the lady that went into a photo lab there at NASA.
Yeah, she was in one of the rooms that were watching the televised pictures of a Viking on Mars. And as they were sitting there, in plain view, a gentleman, not in a spacesuit or anything, just in regular clothes, walked across the surface and came over to the Viking and made in a little adjustment and then walked back off the set. And so she ran upstairs to where the master video was, and that door was locked. And so she went back down, and it never happened again. But that kind of proves that those videos were being made at Death Valley. And the whole thing was a hoax, as much of NASA stuff is.
Why would they do that?
They don't want us to know. They want us to keep us dumbed down. They don't want us to give real information. For instance, every single planet in our solar system, and there are 40. We're only told about 10. 40 of the planets are populated. It's enormous population, an enormous trade going on, and people going this way and that way. It's so busy that it's unbelievable, and they just don't want us to know about that. The people on Venus have a nice planet there, and they're all settled. It's not like Earth. Earth is essentially a prison planet, and we're kept on Earth by the Van Allen Belt. The Van Allen Belt is the radiation belt that extends from about 500 miles out to about 25,000 miles out, and produces so much radiation that nobody could go through that unless they were in an alien-produced vehicle or had 32 feet of radiation wall. So that's why Apollo or any of those missions could never have gone, is because the radiation was just too dangerous. And the way we found the radiation was in 1959. We sent three rockets up, and Dr. Van Allen had put Geiger counters on those ships, and one in three worked. Number two didn't. But what one in three told us was the farther up they went, the stronger the radiation got. As a matter of fact, it burned out the Geiger counters on the way up. And so they were pretty aware of that time, and that would have been 1959, that there was no possibility of going to the moon, as President Kennedy suggested in 1960 or 1961. And so it was at that time they decided to fake the whole thing, mainly because they needed the money for another program. And the other program was to set up a defense system, which we have now in operation, which is in low Earth orbit. And there's 24 weaponized platforms run by the U.S. Navy, 24 weaponized platforms, and then there's two other command platforms. And they're manned and operating all the time, 24/7. And they have weapons that that do all kinds of things. But it was originally constructed, the weapons are originally constructed to get rid of the Greys. The government has always felt that the Greys were a threat. Now, there's no possibility they're going to get rid of the Greys, but that's what they think they're going to do.
Okay. Now, let's deal with a couple of ideas here about Mars and NASA, because I have been tough on NASA about Mars, and the reason I've been tough about Mars is because a lot of the things that they say don't match the photographs they release. And every once in a while, they have an oops moment where somebody at NASA says something that's out of step with the party line. Now, one of the projects that NASA funded, and they actually built the prototype and they tested the prototype, that was an airplane that they were going to fly on Mars. Meanwhile, back at the NASA website, their official statement about conditions on Mars says that the atmospheric pressure is less than 1% of what we have at surface, less than 1% of what we have here on Earth. It's 0.7.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, gravity on Mars, according to their chart, is approximately 50% of what we have here on Earth. Now, you're a pilot. And let's just take any aircraft. I'll take what was your favorite aircraft to fly?
The Lockheed L-1011.
Okay, the L-1011. If you were going to fly the L-1011 on Mars, let's say we reduce the size and weight of that aircraft by 50%, so that the same, we'll reduce it by the same amount as the gravity on Mars is reduced from Earth. So we keep a level ratio there. So we reduce the size and weight by 50%. Don't you still need an atmosphere that is roughly 50% as dense as Earth in order to fly that thing?
Yeah, you need a dense atmosphere. That's what keeps the airplane flying. That's Bernoulli's theory.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is that Mars currently has gravity very similar to Earth. Like the Moon has gravity that's 70% of Earth. That's why the Apollo program could have never gone to the Moon, because they didn't have enough fuel to get out of orbit at 60 miles, go land on the surface of the Moon, and then take off, reacquire the module, and attach, and then come home. There just wasn't enough fuel to do that. They had 22,000 pounds of fuel. Now, they could have done that with what we're told is one-sixth the gravity of Earth, but it's not that. It's not one-sixth. It's 70%.
Okay. So this thing about flying an airplane on Mars, what's interesting is they actually did build that airplane. And of course, it was going to be a remotely controlled or pre-programmed flight, not a manned flight, but nevertheless, it's a flight. And so yeah. Any size aircraft, you take it to Mars, you're going to have air density that is thick, roughly at least 50%, because gravity is 50%. Well, I mean, according to their chart, gravity is about 50% of Earth, so you would have to have an air density at least 50% of what you have on Earth in order to fly the aircraft. So when they made that statement, that they were going to fly this aircraft, I started watching, and I started, watching as, you know, pictures started appearing on the internet of the craft, and it was nothing exotic. It had wings. I mean, it was an airplane, and regardless of what you use for propulsion, well, I guess if you use rockets, you could, you know, you wouldn't have to have thick atmosphere, but this was not a rocket-propelled plane. In fact, their first version was going to be a prop plane, a pusher, with the prop in the back. You can't do that if their chart about Mars is right. And here recently, they've been saying, you know, we think we have seen water flows on Mars on the surface. But they've been telling us, John, forever, that Mars' atmosphere is so thin, liquid water cannot exist. That's what they've been telling us. It's so thin,
right,
liquid
water.
They
don't want us to think anybody lives up there.
Yeah, well, here's what I'm wondering. We got the deal with the airplane. You got the deal with the, we think we've seen liquid water flows on Mars. You have the polar lander called the Phoenix, landed up near the North Pole of Mars, so they say. And Dr. Peter Smith, who was running that project, after they scooped up some of the soil and tested it, he said, it's just like the dirt in your backyard. You could grow asparagus in it. All of a sudden, bunches of NASA people start saying, well, no, you probably couldn't because it's got perchlorate in it. But their test did not show any chlorine. Their test showed heavy spikes of oxygen in the soil, but no chlorine. Well, in order to have perchlorate, you have to have chlorine. But their test didn't show any chlorine. So when you lump all this together, it says to me that the conditions on Mars are much more Earth-like than we have been led to believe.
Absolutely.
Now, you said that there's a big population on Mars. How do we know that?
I know that because of the sources that I have, and there's not only Mars. I mean, there's a huge population on the Moon. The Moon population on the Moon is between a billion and 2 billion. I think it's about 1.5 billion people just like us, only substantially more sociologically advanced and technologically advanced. And basically their job is to monitor Earth and see that we don't blow ourselves up, and also to see that we don't escape low Earth orbit. They don't want us going around the solar system spreading our ideas of democracy and using our weapons to foul everything up. So we're pretty much prisoners here with the Van Allen belt keeping us on in low Earth orbit.
So the people on the moon are basically the prison wardens, right?
Right.
They're the jailers.
Right.
Ah. Now, do they ever come to Earth?
All the time, and they take people for visits. In 1956, they took Howard Menger, and they took him for a couple of weeks, and he wrote a book called From Outer Space. And Howard just died here a couple of months. Well, no, it's been a year now. And he was an advisor to the Pentagon on what was going on the moon. George Adamski was another one they took. I think they didn't land on the moon with George. I think they took him to Venus. But they take scientists and teachers. They take all kinds of different sections of the population up there to show it what it's really like.
Adamski is an interesting case because, of course, all the debunkers have tried to paint him as a hoax, a fraud, and a nut. And yet, and this was pointed out to me by one of our callers the other night here at the show, he's buried in Arlington Cemetery, Arlington National Cemetery. So if he was...
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. And look, I have to be honest with you. I haven't double-checked that, but one of the callers to the show the other night asked me if I knew that about him being buried in Arlington, and I did not. I had not heard that. But that would be pretty telling, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you say the population on Mars is roughly equivalent to the population here on Earth, right?
Right, right. It's a very, very busy place.
Do these people live underground?
Some of them do. Some of them live above ground.
Uh-huh. What are the true conditions like on Mars?
It's a similar atmosphere temperature to Earth. And as a matter of fact, all the planets are relatively similar to Earth. People think that the sun is a nuclear reactor some kind, and puts out...
Okay, John, we have to step away for break. We're going to pick up right there at the sun when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back in just a moment. Welcome back, and my guest this evening here on the Kevin Smith Show is John Lear. John, we stepped away for break just as you were beginning to talk about the sun, and a lot of people think it's a nuclear reactor.
Yeah, in fact, it's an electromagnetic sphere, and what it does, it radiates a wave that the atmospheres of every particular planet filters to make the proper temperature. In other words, we're told the mercury is hot enough to melt lead. In fact, it's not. Mercury's atmosphere filters the temperature to be about 72 on the surface. The same thing with Pluto. We're told that it's cold enough to be a permanent iceberg, when in fact it's not. It uses the electromagnetic wave to filter. It uses its atmosphere to filter the electromagnetic wave and makes a comfortable temperature of between 70 and 80 degrees, and that's good for all the planets. We're told that the four biggest planets, Saturn, Jupiter, Neptune, and let's see, what's the other one, are giant gas giants, when in fact there's only one gas giant in our solar system, And that's NASA. It's spelled NASA.
All right, now you said that there are about 40 planets in our solar system, right?
Right. NASA is aware of a couple that they haven't told us about, but there are, in fact, 40. And they have different densities, and they're out there, but we're not aware of them.
Our longtime listeners will remember, I believe it was in 2010, if not, it was early 2011, when I did a couple of shows about the Astronomical Telegram Bureau. And the Astronomical Telegram Bureau is, it's a weird name, but that's part of the International Astronomical Union. And it is the agency responsible for disseminating information between astronomers around the world about various discoveries and so forth. In 1973, each year they publish an annual report. And so their annual report from 1973 actually states, John, in their own words, that there were several minor planets discovered in our solar system that year, and that the International Astronomical Union had decided to suppress that information, and that's the word they used, to suppress that information, and did not disseminate it to or through the Astronomical Telegram Bureau. They decided to suppress it. So there were some planets discovered in 1973 that were suppressed. And again, that's their word. I quoted their word from their report.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe the astronomers worldwide know about these things, because they certainly, the ones that discovered those minor planets in 1973.
And they're hidden. Some of them are hidden with mirrors. Some of them are hidden with other technology. But no, we're not supposed to know about them. So our astronomers would not know about them.
And is that because we're a prison planet?
Yeah, we have no need to know.
Uh-huh. Do you think we're a prison planet, or do you think maybe we're an insane asylum?
Well, there's certainly a lot of us that could use a little help, but no, in fact, we're a prison planet. We're here to mature our souls, and what we're supposed to do is learn how to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And once we achieve that, it may take 50 lifetimes, it may take 100, it may take more. But when we graduate, when we learn how to live our lives with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, then we go out to get to go out and play with the adults, and we get to go to all these places.
So how long do you think this thing, this kindergarten here on Earth, is going to go on?
It'll go on for a good long time. The universe is infinite. There is no end to it. We're told that, you know, that's 17 billion years old, but that is such nonsense. We're only told that because that's as far as we can see.
Mm-hmm.
And but in fact, it's infinite, and the universe has been going on forever. There has been no such big bang. There will be no collapsing at the end. There is no expansion of the universe. There is no contraction. It's just a great place filled with all kinds of interesting things, but we're in the prison planet, and we're not supposed to know about that.
Well, I fully agree with you that it's you know, the 17 billion light years, that's as far as we can see. I totally agree with that, because, I mean, the Doppler effect happens not only with sound, it happens with light as well. So when you see as far as you can, that's as a result of the Doppler effect. And if we could go there and stand at that point, I bet you we could see another $17 billion beyond that.
Yeah, and much, much further.
Mm-hmm.
But we're fed a bunch of nonsense, and they keep feeding it to us. So there's no intention of ever letting us know what's going on. People say, well, when are they going to tell us? When's the disclosure going to be? Well, disclosure will happen in about 5 to 7 decades from right now. And it won't be an announcement. People will be so used to seeing saucers that it will be a case of, oh yeah, well, so what? I knew that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of some being presidential announcement and parades and stuff like that, it'll just happen naturally. But right now we're fed. And we're kept being fed stuff like Einstein's theory of relativity, both special and general. It's all nonsense. It's not true. There is no limit to the speed. We're certainly not the speed of light. And Newton's law, his second law, is wrong. There is no basis for Newton's assumption that gravitational force is due and is proportional to the quantity or density of matter. It doesn't work like that. If you take Kepler's third law and you run it for all the planets, you'll come out with a figure that is much, much more accurate and very much different from Kepler's second law. So we're continually fed this baloney, and it's in the children's school books, in the mainstream science. Mainstream science just a few months ago had the gravity bee probe telling us that it had proven that Einstein was right, and it's not. He's wrong. I wrote a 15-page essay on why it was wrong, and for the basis of this essay I used a book called The Gravitational Force of the Sun, written by Perry Spolter. That's S-P-O-L-T-E-R, Perry Spolter. It was published in 1993, and she explains exactly how and why Einstein was wrong. And it's a very interesting book, and those who are interested should really get a copy and read it, if they're interested in knowing how it really works.
John, you've got 19,000 flight hours. That's a lot. That's a ton. Several tons. In all those 19,000 hours in the air, did you ever see what we commonly refer to as either a UFO or flying saucer?
Yeah, two or three times. One, I was on descent into Los Angeles on a clear afternoon. I was over Palm Springs on the normal approach, and a object which this was in 1966. It was
We got caught by a break again. What time is flying? We're going to pick up right there with that landing and that sighting when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is John Lear. If you're joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. Sincere sympathy to you for whatever kept you away from the first hour, but we're glad you're here now. I also want to say hello to my mom, because she's getting to watch the show live tonight, and I'm delighted about that. So hi, Mom. My guest is John Lear, and John, you were telling us about 1966. You're piloting an airplane, and you're descending into Los Angeles.
Yeah, about 33,000 feet, and this object, which I at the time I thought was an M2F2, which is the airplane that the $6 million man crashed in, if you remember that series. And it was essentially a lifting body. It didn't have an engine. It was dropped from space and used the curvature or the lifting capabilities to actually fly to the landing spot. And it passed from my left to my right, going in front of me. And I even called the chief pilot of Learjet when I landed and said, "Hey, guess what? M2F2 passed me today on approach to Los Angeles." And he made some comment, but only 20 years later did I realize how impossible that would have been for an M2F2 to have been in the approach corridor of Los Angeles International Airport. That airplane only stays out in the Edwards Air Force test range, which is way, way to the north of Los Angeles. So that was definitely something strange. Then the other one I saw was about 15 years ago. I was flying an L-1011. We were just past Chicago at night going to Los Angeles, and I saw these lights. There were two of them in a row, and they were going south to north, and they'd get to a point and they'd go straight up. I mean, they would just, there was no blast off or no light, they just go straight up. And they would do it about every 60 seconds. And after I saw the, you know, when you see those things looking out the left-hand side of the airplane, I never have enough time for the crew to come over, you know, like say, "Hey, quick, look at this." Because if I do, by the time they get there, there's nothing there, and they think you're nuts. So, But however, after the third one, I thought, you know, I'm going to try this. "Hey, you guys, watch this. Come on over here." And two more of them went. And those guys, you know, said, "Boy, I never saw anything like that." And then, of course, the other one that I saw wasn't in flight. It was when Bob Lazar took me out to the Groom Lake test area, and we watched one of the saucers fly that he worked on. He worked on back engineering saucers for Dr. Teller there. And he knew the night of the test flights, and he took us out on, March 22nd, 1989. And I had enough time to get my Celestron 8 telescope hooked up so that I had an excellent view, and it was definitely a flying saucer. It was oriented about 30 degrees to the horizon, and it was radiating something. Something was coming off the saucer itself. It looked like it was little pieces of something, and they were gold, yellowish gold. And I watched it descend into the Groom Lake area. So those are the three, and I think there may be another one, but I can't remember what it is at this time.
Now you mentioned Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar, of course, I don't think he realized what kind of a storm he was going to step into by going public. See, what happens most of the time is people think, well, yeah, you know, the establishment are going to be ticked off, but the folks in the UFO community are going to be very excited about this, and you know, and they don't expect to get ravaged by people in the UFO community, but they do, and they do because people in the UFO community are just another slice of society. They're not unique. They're just like everybody else. And there are all kinds of self-appointed geniuses and self-appointed integrity cops and all of that. And you know, if they can beat you down, they're going to do it. And so he experienced a lot of that. And there are people who, for a while, have taken the position, for some time now, have taken the position that he was a fraud. I don't think he was. And I've enumerated on this show why I don't think he was a fraud. But you know him, and what's your take on it? You think he's the real deal?
Absolutely. I knew him when he didn't believe flying saucers, and not only didn't he believe, he was really down on them. And we used to sit in my den, and he'd say, "You guys are crazy." He says, "I worked at Los Alamos National Labs." He said, "I had a Q clearance He said, if there would have been anything like that, I would have known about it, because I used to sneak around all the time and find all their secret stuff. And he said, this just can't be true. And that was the summer of 1988. And over the next few months, we gave him enough information to check out that he could check out with Los Alamos to prove that it might be so. But that's when he called Dr. Teller and asked for a job up at the test site. And, of course, Dr. Teller gave it to him. And he got three technical interviews in November of 1988. And then the next thing I knew, he's sitting in front of my desk on December 6th, 1988 in the evening, and he says, I saw a disc today. And I said, what? And he said, I saw a disc today. And I said, theirs or ours? He said, theirs. And I said, you went to Groom Lake? He said, yep. And I said, well, what are you doing here? I said, they're obviously going to follow you. Why don't you work there for a while and then tell me what's going on? And he said, no, you've taken so much jazz over this that I wanted to tell you it's true. I saw it. I touched it. It's real. And so then he worked there for another 3 or 4 months. And then he took me out to see the saucer. And, of course, the third night that we went out, we all got caught, and he got dragged into security and told that, you know, they said, now, Bob, when we gave you this clearance, it didn't mean you were supposed to tell all your friends about the flying saucers. So do you want to work here or not? And Bob was noncommittal at that point, and the reason was is because the last two trips he made up to Groom Lake, he would get on the airplane at McCarran. He could remember going up the steps to the airplane and then coming down the steps when he returned, but he couldn't remember anything in between that. He couldn't remember what he did at work. So he didn't want to work under those circumstances, and so he never did go back.
So there's not a doubt in your mind that he's the real deal?
No, not a single doubt. I keep in touch with him. He's he lives now in Langsburg, Michigan. He runs the fourth largest technical and scientific supply company in the world. It's called United Nuclear. You can find it on your computer, on your website. And he's doing well in his business, very well.
Well, that's a good
thing.
He has
told me that if he had to do it over again, he wouldn't have done it like that.
He wouldn't have gone public?
No.
Well, that happens. You know, you've had it happen. I've had it happen. I can write an article that says the sky is blue, and that's all it says. I can release that article, and people are lined up waiting to debunk it. You know, and so consequently, as the show has grown larger, I publish fewer articles. And, you know, these days, I do publish a few, usually at UFO Digest. And, I'm just too busy to put up with that nonsense. And, how have you responded to it?
The same way as you. I don't bother, I don't invite, debate. If people want to listen to what I have to say, I'm fine to tell them, but I'm not there to debate. I know what I saw. I lived, you know, right next to Bob for that whole 3 years. I know exactly how it happened. I know exactly what went on. No, I didn't go up to Groom Lake, but I didn't have to because of the different things that we did that proved that, that he worked up there. So I just let it slide, and I have a little niche over there on Godlike Productions. It's a website, a forum that I post on, and I got a few friends where we discuss this stuff, and the people who aren't interested just don't show up because the other people make sure that they're not invited back. So I tell them what I know, and we go from there.
You told us about seeing UFOs in your career. What about ETs? Have you ever met any extraterrestrials, any of these people from the moon that have come here for a visit or from Mars that you've met?
No, no, I have not.
Do you know of people who have?
Yeah.
And are, in your opinion, these are people whose testimony about having met with these ETs would be reliable testimony?
Absolutely.
Okay. Tell you what I'd like to do. I want to open up the telephone lines and allow people to participate in tonight's show.
That'd be great.
All right. And, ladies and gentlemen, the telephone lines are now open. And if you wish to be transported here to the studio where you can make a comment or ask a question of John Lear, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. Doesn't matter whether you're east or west of the Rockies or right on top of them. That's the number, 623-444-5889. Now, if you're outside the USA and you're outside of Canada, that telephone number will work. However, we understand that international long distance can be very expensive sometimes. So if you're out of the USA and out of Canada, if you don't want to make the international long distance call, you can use our flash message option on my website. Just go to kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down. You'll see the picture about tonight's show. And right above that picture is the link that says flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi. Just wanted to say to your mother that she must be very proud of you, and I wanted to say hi to her, and since I know she's listening.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Lear, you mentioned that we are a prison planet, and you stated the fact that whoever it is, the reason they're imprisoning us is they did not want democracy to spread, among other reasons. I understand that, like, democracy started around 350 B.C., just around that time. And when do you think we actually became a prison planet?
It's always been a prison planet from the very beginning, and that must be, I think the Earth is about 24 billion years old, so it's probably back then.
Oh, it seems like why would we be a prison planet from the beginning?
Well, that's where they bring the people in the different solar systems and universes around around this universe. They bring them for their souls to be matured. It's just one of hundreds of millions of the Earths that are there for the souls to mature.
When you're talking about souls maturing, Are you speaking like a reincarnation?
Yeah.
So you're
yeah, we learn how to we try to learn how to live our lives with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And if we don't learn it, then when we reincarnate, we come back to Earth again. If we have learned the lesson, then we get to go out and go to other different planets and other different places in the universe.
And you mentioned that the defense system that the United States Navy operates is really, you think that they're trying to get rid of the grays?
Yes.
And on the, do you think that the chemtrails is something that might be trying, the defense system is trying to control the grays with?
I don't know. I don't know anything about the chemtrails except that they do exist, but I don't know what they're for.
Mm-hmm. And, I could go on. I'll leave others. You're very interesting, Mr. Lear.
Thank you.
Jerome, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889, the magic combination that will transport you to this studio. And we hope you will avail yourself of the opportunity to speak with John Lear. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Jackie from Florida.
Hi, Jackie.
And I want to say it's great to hear Mr. Lear. I truly enjoy listening to him whenever I get a chance. And I just have two things I'd like to ask him about, if I could.
All right.
One is what he might think of Elenin, and the other thing is if he might speak a minute or two about the black soul collecting box up on the moon. That might enlighten a little bit of us here.
What box is that on the moon?
Did you mention one time that there was a box or some contraption on the moon that collected
soul? Yeah. Okay, first of all, Elenin, it's supposed to be some kind of threat, but it's not. It's just another thing that's being put into the public's mind as being a threat. I don't know what it's all about. It's like Y2K. It'll come and go, and nothing will ever happen. It's like 2012 when the world's supposed to end. None of that's going to happen. But the alleged soul catcher on the moon was a giant. When Lunar Orbiter 3 took its 84th picture, it had a picture of a tower. I say glassine tower because you could see through it. It's like it was made of glass, and it's about 7 miles high, and it sits right smack dab in the middle of the Sinus Medi. Which, if you're looking at the moon, it's right dead center of it. And it's a tripod that goes up about 5 miles, 6 miles, and then on the top is a cube. And it's a perfect cube, 1 mile in each dimension. And I propose that at the same time that I was looking at that photo that the Lunar Orbiter photographer or the photo mission took, I was reading a book by Joe McMonagle, and he was one of the Army's remote viewers in the Stargate program, and he was tasked to follow a soul after a person had died, and this person had died on a trip south of San Francisco, and he had to go and find the soul and then follow it, and the soul was on its way to the moon. And so as he got closer and closer to the moon, this voice kept saying, "You're not allowed here. Do not come here. This is not your place. You're not allowed." And it got so loud that he finally had to break off the chase because he feared for his life. But anyway, that kind of tipped me off that after you die, your souls go to the moon. So about that time, I found out about that big crystal cube, and I thought, well, that's maybe where it's going, and that's how the whole story started about the soul catcher on the moon. Now, when we die, there are different transfer stations around Earth that we immediately go to, and then we're reincarnated into a baby about 3 days old. And I thought that maybe the one on the moon was for either special cases or whatever. But anyway, these transfer stations are all around Earth, and that's normally where we go. And I just propose that maybe the soul catcher on the moon might be one of those places. Now, when I say catcher, somebody named it that. They don't catch you. Your soul only goes in there for a very short time, where you're given a review of your previous life or the life you just came from, and then you're sent back again to try it again. And, of course, the object is to learn how to live your life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And once you learn that lesson, then you don't have to come back to Earth. You reincarnate into other places, far more exciting and interesting than Earth.
Well, I think those words are worthy of a T-shirt for sure. No hatred, no greed, no envy. Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure, and so glad you were on. It's been a great show, Kevin. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. We have a flash message here from Nick in Thailand. Mr. Lear, when you spoke about the radiation belt around our planet, I wonder if this same kind of radiation belt is around the other planets.
That's a good question. They're not around the ones in our solar system, but they may be around other solar systems where there are other prison planets similar to Earth. In other words, there's a billion times a billion Earths with that are similar to ours. Some of the people are more advanced than us, some are less advanced than us, but all of us, all of these Earths are doing the same thing, is that they're places for the soul to mature and to learn to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed.
Okay, good enough. Nick, thanks for the flash message. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hello, Ryan.
John, can you tell us about some more things that Bob Lazar saw in his briefing book that you might not have told us before, something new? And then the second question is, are you familiar with the story of Jerry Wills, who was brought here as an infant and adopted by a Mason and is still living on this planet? He's been on this show several times.
No, I don't know that. I don't know that name, and I don't know that story. You say Jerry Wills?
Yeah, it's Jerry Wills.
I'm not familiar with that story. I thought I knew most of them.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the things that they told Bob was basically what he put on the Lazar tape. They told him that that they had made Jesus and several of the other Buddha and several of other the God type things, and it was more or less to make rules and regulations so that we wouldn't hurt ourselves while we were developing. I can't remember what else they told him in that book briefing, but it was basically the stuff that's on the Lazar tape.
Okay. I have a question for you, but we're going to take this call, and we'll get to my question on the other side of the next break. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Tony from Denver. Thanks for taking my call, Kevin.
Okay, Tony.
Mr. Lear, you have always been a role model for me, especially when it comes to your steadfast reluctance against conventional wisdom. Next year, Obama will make a re-election movie about his supposed killing of Osama bin Laden, and next month will be 10 years of lies about the Twin Towers. But, Mr. Lear, it has been 40 years of the Apollo moon landing hoax. In all this time, how can people possibly believe no country has any interest in supposedly returning to the moon?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? People just assume we went there. I even have good friends who I respect and who are very knowledgeable, and they honestly believe that we went to the moon in the Hollywood and the Apollo missions. And I give them a few of the facts, and they just don't want to hear it. They've got other things to do, and they're sure that Neil and Buzz walked on the moon, and that's all they want to hear.
And if you could you spend a few minutes on the significance of the 10 years of the 9/11 hoax as well?
Well, the 9/11 hoax, of course, was to create an enemy.
John, I hate to do it. A break just took over. Tony, we'll get John to answer that as soon as we're back from this break, okay? Folks, we shall return after this.
And you're listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is John Lear, and caller, hang on, we'll get to you next. John, you were answering Tony's question about 9/11 hoax 10 years on now.
Yeah, the 9/11 hoax was merely an effort to take over the Middle East, and basically what we had to do is make the Muslim Arab the bad guys, and make people think that they had commandeered a couple of four airplanes and crashed them, and we had to go after them and settle the score. And actually, that was just contrived. There was no Arabs, no hijacked airplanes. No airplanes crashed on 9/11, and it was mainly to go over to the Middle East and start digging over Afghanistan. Afghanistan was hit first because we needed the opium growing capabilities of the Hindu Kush over there in northeast Afghanistan, and the output of the illegal drugs in 2001 was 5% for Afghanistan, and now under our direction and control, it's achieved 95%, and all that goes to us in our black projects and lots of things we have to do. So that was the funding for it, and then we had to go into Iraq to get their oil, and then we had to create all the problems in the Northern Africa so that we could have an excuse to go to Southern Africa, and or not Southern Africa, but the southern of Saudi Arabia, where the Gulf of Aden is, and take over that. The reason is because when we attack Iran, they will close the Straits of Hormuz, and the only way to get oil out to the public will be through the pipelines that go down to Yanbu on the Red Sea. And when it gets to the Red Sea, there's only two places to go, the Suez Canal or the Gulf of Aden. And, of course, we control most of Somalia and the southern part of the Gulf with our deep water port called Berbera. But what we need is the northern part, which is controlled by Aden. So we had to say that there was a bunch of Al-Qaeda in Aden, and we're moving our way into taking over Yemen. And as soon as we do that, we'll attack Iran. It's all a game.
You don't know how much I hope you're wrong. I hope you are so dead wrong. I really do hope you are. I'm not saying you are. I'm saying I hope you are. Let's take this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin and John. This is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hi.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. John, you talked about the length. You mentioned the length of time about reincarnation. Now, from what I've read, I've normally read that, you know, I guess there's no real average, but normally they speak about, you mentioned about just a few days or, you know, a short period. Normally you hear that it's, you know, like 40 years, 100 years, or whatever it may be before a person comes back. Can you speak more about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand. Once you die, you come back in like a few seconds. It's not very long.
Where did you get that information from?
It's what?
He wants to know where you got that information.
Oh, some of I get from Sleeper. His name is Lou Baldin. That's Baldin. He's written a couple of books. One is called In League with the UFO, and the other is, I forget, it's Lulu Publications. And he has a couple of, has a website or two, and you can Google his name, Sleeper. He uses two names. One is Sleeper, S-L-E-E-P-E-R, or Lou Baldin, B-A-L-D-I-N. And some very interesting books that he's written. Once you start reading it, you'll understand why I think his information is correct.
Is there any way to know about, let's say, it could be me, you, or anyone dies, who they may come back as?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just a couple of months ago, there was that kid that was born and remembered that he was the fighter pilot over Iwo Jima. And when he was 3 or 4 years old, he recalled the names of his squadron people. He remembered the name of the airplane he was flying. He remembered what went wrong, how he got shot down. He remembered dying. And, you know, there was all kinds of proof that his soul was that person. And there's, you know, that's not the only recorded case. There's many cases of that. Now, how to figure out where you came from, I don't know. I've kind of worked out my dates, but it's too difficult to do.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, I'll let someone else call. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Rusty.
Okay, Graham.
We have a flash message from Umberto in Mexico. Kevin, fantastic guest. I would like to quote tonight Mr. Eckhart. Quote, if the only prayer you said in your whole life was thank you, that would suffice. End quote. And then he says, thank you, John. So, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. That's the number to call if you have a question or comment for our guest this evening. Our guest is John Lear. John, I said I had a question that I was going to hold, and I've held it now for a long time, so I'm going to ask it. Earlier, one of the callers asked if you knew about Jerry Wills, who was... his story is that he's an extraterrestrial. He's human, just like us, but he's not from here, and he was left here by people from another planet to be found and adopted and raised by a U.S. Army officer and his wife. This is not the first time I've heard that scenario. Have you run into that before?
No. No, I have not.
I've heard that on a couple of occasions. I've heard others who said that during the 1950s, there was apparently a rash of these, a number of these babies that were deposited right outside an Army base somewhere. The Army knew they were coming, went out, picked them up, and then they were adopted and raised as though they were just one of us. According to Jerry, this was just a program of his people to sort of have some sort of liaison, to kind of understand us better by having some of their own raised among us. What do you think about that?
Well, that doesn't sound right, because we're made specifically for our souls to mature. So why anybody would be coming here to understand us doesn't sound logical in that vein.
Okay. So these people on the moon, when they travel to the Earth, what are they coming for?
To show some of the people what it's like up there, and that there is life elsewhere, and that they can live in peace, and they have a tremendous resourceful growing methods, and you know, the food sources, and show them how big how good vegetables can be grown with the right fertilizers and stuff like that. They just, you know, what it's like elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fairness now, Jerry does say that that is part of what he and the others are supposed to be doing here, is attempting to help people to mature, to live peacefully and without greed and without hatred and so forth. And that's and basically that is what he spends his life doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's almost 7 feet tall.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I know him personally. Great person. But most people need a stepladder to talk with him. He is tall. He really is. Hey, do you know Jim Delatoso?
Sure.
Okay, Jim used to be in a rock group, a rock group. It was called UFO.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, Jerry was the bass player.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So if you look at any of the old videos or the old pictures of UFO, that really tall guy playing bass, that's Jerry Wills.
I'll be darned. That's interesting.
Yeah. Do you think Bob Lazar would step back into the public light ever again?
No, no. I think he's. I think they took him back to work, and I know they took him back to work, and one of the promises was that he wouldn't cause any more trouble.
Well, yeah, I think most of the dust up was caused really by the experts in the UFO community.
Yeah.
It really was. And it's interesting, though, because, you know, we sort of have this idea that if one of those guys steps out of line, they get killed. And,
yeah.
And you know, we know a number of people who have stepped out of line and they haven't been killed. Now, you're one of them. You know, you flew for the CIA, and everything you've said on this show tonight is definitely out of line with the establishment views.
I didn't compromise any of my sources. In other words, I'm not telling you any information that I got through the agency.
Okay. So you can tell the information as long as you don't tell the source.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a time, a point in all these years where you really were concerned for your own safety?
Not in this field. I mean, there's been some times when I was flying that it was completely unrelated to UFOs that I worried for my life, but not in the UFO field.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. John, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
How are y'all tonight?
Good.
Good, thanks.
Kevin, I sent you after that show that night, I sent you an email to host with a photograph of Gray Barker at Adamski's grave in Arlington.
Okay.
Also one of Adamski. And then one of his tombstones. Did you receive that?
I received the email, but it did not have anything attached to it.
Oh, wow. I need to resend those then for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mike, was it you that mentioned that he was buried at Arlington?
Yes.
So you're the one that called in and told us that Adamski was buried at Arlington. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And as I was looking at his tombstone, it seems that he fought the United States Army in World War I.
Wow.
Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but, I mean, that would give him a reason to put him there, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it would. All right. Mike, you have a question or comment for John?
No. I've known John for a long time.
All right, we have a break taking over. Mike, thanks for the call. John, we will be back right after this. Folks, hang in there. We have a few minutes left in tonight's show. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Caller, hang on just a moment. And I got a flash message during the break I want to share with you from Gil in the UK. He says, good to see you relaxing with what you Yanks call a cold one. You need to relax now and again. Well, thank you, Gil. However, it's not what we Yanks call a cold one. That is a Shasta tonic water. I ran out of coffee, and you know I can't function without coffee, but I'm out of coffee, so I opened a Shasta tonic water. That's what that is. But thank you, Gil. Okay. And by the way, there never has been nor shall there ever be a time when I consume alcohol while I'm working. In fact, I don't drink. So it's not smart to pilot an airplane after you've been drinking. And it's not smart to try and do a talk show after you've been drinking either, because then you kind of sound like this. Okay, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin and John. This is Tony from Norman, Oklahoma.
Hello, Tony from Norman.
Hey, Tony. How you doing?
Okay, John. How are you?
Good.
I think it was on Art's show when you did that... that test, the Lear test. that was so good. That was so good. But when he opened up the phone lines, I'm pretty sure it was that show where a guy called in, and he said that he was working. He had worked at JPL. And that he was watching live feed coming down from Mars. And yeah. This was in on a TV in a break room, I think he said. And he said he was watching the live feed, and a guy walked up to one of the rovers. He was looking at the live feed from Opportunity or whatever. And
that's right. I thought it was a girl, but if you remembered a guy, then that's what it was.
Yeah, and the guy walked up to the rover, and the picture went blank.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I remember that.
That was unbelievable. I mean, that just proves what you say. I mean, I don't think the guy was full of garbage.
No, he could breathe real fine over there in Death Valley.
John, it's always so good to hear from you.
Okay, great.
Tony, thanks for the call. All right, folks, we have time for one more really quick call. So if you've been trying to get through, now's the time to give it that extra effort. 623-444-5889. As I said, it doesn't matter if that's east of the Rockies or west of the Rockies or on top of the Rockies. That's the transport number to the studio. 623-444-5889. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
Well, we're waiting for somebody to call in. Adamski's tombstone, I looked it up here, lists his World War I military service as a private in Company A, 23rd Battalion, U.S. National Guard.
There you go. So that's what qualifies him to be in Arlington Cemetery.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, even that, I mean, there are lots and lots of soldiers that died and are not buried in Arlington. Not everybody gets to be buried there, even if they are soldiers.
Right, and there's a lot of people buried there that shouldn't be buried there.
So, anyway, Adamski obviously served the country well and honorably, even if people thought he was nuts. And, of course, I don't think he was nuts, but a lot of people did. It's just a real disease, I guess. Maybe it's a genetic disorder for our race. But there seems to be a tendency to think that different is wrong. And plus, if I haven't seen it, then it didn't happen.
Right.
And you're saying you saw it, I didn't see it, therefore it didn't happen, but you keep saying you saw it, you're different, so you're wrong. And that's kind of how our society operates. And let me ask you, folks, how's that working out for you? Economy's doing real well, isn't it? Politics is nice. Those kind of very, very, very infantile social beliefs. How's that working out for you? John, you don't have a website. You're not selling any books or DVDs. You have nothing to gain from telling the things that you tell. Do you have anything to lose by telling?
No, not really. I've been retired now for 11 years, and I'm 69, and I spend my life spoiling my grandchildren.
Well, that's what grandpas are supposed to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you still fly ever?
I'm pretty busy.
Do you ever fly these days?
No, never fly.
Do you miss it?
No, not at all.
Well, I guess...
part of my life, and it was a lot of fun, and I flew in the best of times and flew the best of aircraft, and that was one part of my life, and now this is another part, and it's... onward and upward.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's, I can understand that. That's the way I feel about, I spent years and years as a cop and transitioned from that to this. And I get asked sometimes, do you ever miss it? And the answer is, there was never one single day when I was a cop, never a day, but what I wanted to get up and go to work. I loved it. But when I left, it was over, and
yeah.
I don't want to go back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's how I feel.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. It's been absolutely fascinating, as always. And let me ask you this. You're part of the pilot. What is it? 911 Pilots for Truth? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you be willing to come back on and talk to us just about that? There's some pretty strange things beginning to surface about all that now, and I really would like to hear what from your perspective, what's the real deal and the details behind all of that. But if you would be willing to do that, we'll get you scheduled and get you back on here to talk about 911. Okay.
Sure, anytime.
All right. If you will, just hang on the line for a moment. I want to talk with you for just a moment after we bring this flight of the Kevin Smith Show in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, be sure that you take your seats. Make sure your trays are in the upright position. Fasten your seat belts and hang on, because we are landing. We've just got a few seconds left here. I want to remind you that we've got a members area. The members area is chock full of features, all kinds of great stuff for you. Sometimes people will email me and want to know, well, how can I watch the show? Well, the way you watch the show is become a member. And becoming a member right now is exorbitantly expensive. It's 23 cents a day. That comes out to $6.95 a month. Skip Starbucks one morning out of the month, and that pays for it. Join right now. All right, that's it. That's a wrap. My friends call me Steele Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.